Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Jeremy the Impact York. We're here at the season finale of Revolution Zone. It's a little sad, but we're extremely happy. Of course, I'll have on the voice of your revolution here just a few short minutes on Revolution Zone. And, of course, welcome into the Revolution Zone here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks to Impact Media for allowing us to come on each and every week and talk about the best indoor team in the arena football area, in the indoor football area, and that would, of course, be your Texas Revolution. I may be a little biased, but it's my show, so we'll be a little biased about it. Of course, like I said, we do have our very special guest. I'll bring him on just in a few short minutes. Do want to give shout out to all the players and, of course, front office and our guests here in a minute who came on this year. It was a blast getting to talk to everybody. You really got a feel for what this team was all about. And, yeah, it was just a blast. Of course, I've already told our guests this, but we do have the previous guest, of course, Mr. Matt Lunsford, did send in his questions. So we will get to those a little later on because, trust me, at least one of them is a really fun question. But without further ado, go ahead and if I gave Matt theme music, then I have to play his music here. Do want to bring on right now not only the hardest working man in sports radio, but also the voice of your Texas Revolution. Want to bring on my very special guest back again, Mr. Sonny Clark. How you doing, Sonny?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Getting ready to get back into my regular show. As our the Couch Potato Sports Show will go back to our sports themes starting probably Friday. I'm getting with my co-host to get that back up on set. But another great year of indoor football on the Couch Potato Sports Show and another great year of Revolution football. And this one obviously has taken the cake on how well it went.
Oh, man, it just you couldn't. Even though they come up just a few yards short there, it's of the championship. At the same time, you got to say this was such a almost fairy tale season that it deserves its own story.
Absolutely, and when you also think about, really, if you take one of the games that were lost by the Texas Revolution in the regular season, we could have been having a championship game at the Allen Event Center, and we could be talking about maybe a different result of the game if that game was played at the Allen Event Center.
Yes, definitely so, and as both John and Matt said last week, I think you could say some of it was special teams related as far as kicking, and that's something they're going to try to iron out in the off season. Of course, a very busy off season already. We were just speaking earlier on a few things, but you can't really put blame on anything. These guys played and left everything on the field, in my opinion. I went back and watched that game numerous times, and every time I did, somebody knew that was sitting somewhere in the room next to me sat down and watched the game, and all of them had the same reaction. Those guys gave everything they had.
Yeah, and when you said that, unfortunately, could not get the flight into there to be there live, you still seen them, you know, keep going through the motions, even to the last buzzer. So that's always something that when I take a look at this Texas Revolution game, they always think they can win. And that, I think, is maybe a different mentality for this football team compared to the years past, depending upon who the coach was or how the situation was going throughout the season. But this season, like you said, it was a different season with a different feel, and it started at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it definitely did. And, we could go game by game and point out things here or there. But, for the most part, I just wanted to, as a season wrap-up, just kind of go over some of – I had my notes somewhere, and the wind started blowing in here. We got to get better ventilation in this place. But there it is. For the most part, we'll just kind of start – we'll go through the three facets of the game, and then we'll go over some other things as well and just kind of go through, obviously, offense, defense, special teams, and we'll go kind of development overall, kind of who we thought maybe the top performers were. And in the case of offense and defense, we'll think about possible Rookie of the Year candidates.
Definitely. Go ahead.
You know, let's start with the special teams, because all year we both talked about this on all of our different shows. Of course, I did here on Revolution Zone. You did on your pregame and halftime shows as well. Special teams was kind of interesting. It had a lot of ups and downs. Sometimes it was kicking related. Sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes there wasn't even a kicker on the field. But as far as the other things, it seemed like they were always trying to find the right scheme they wanted to use, whether they were receiving or whether they were kicking.
Exactly, and that's where you're putting the right players at the right position. Unfortunately, during the playoffs when the Texas Revolution had to freeze their roster, they got a new kicker. And what happens in the first game after they freeze the roster? Groin pull. And coming from a kicker and knowing exactly what that's all about as far as a groin pull and kicking the football, he was lucky to be able to kick an extra point, never mind anything else. So, but as a whole, as far as the kicking was concerned this year, it was atrocious. And I'll just put it out there, and I've always put it out there. It was horrible. The actual kicking game itself, that is one thing that they have got to greatly improve on coming 2016. If they don't, it cost them games this year, and it cost them quite possibly that championship game at home because of that. Now, I'm going to say that. Probably no one else will say it within the – but I'm going to put it out there. If you win one more game, you got that championship game at home in Allen, and you got a different feel for the game with the Bandits coming into the Allen Event Center. And even with no kicking game, it's hard to win a football game with this football team, with these coaches – at the Allen Event Center. Now, that being said, I'm going to tell you, the special teams on the kickoff coverage, Darius Fudge, always down there on a tackle. This guy has always made his way to whatever he can do to help his team, and he found a way of doing it besides just running the football. I mean, we can look at the stats all day long on Darius Fudge, but if you take some of the other things away from it, he can catch the football. Every running back can, but this guy put in a big, big-time effort on kickoff coverage and getting down, making shoestring tackles, hurting his wrist, which it was hurt all year long, by the way, just to let everybody know. Whenever you've seen him get up, he kind of grabbed for his wrist. It's been hurt all year long, but that don't stop him from making a play. So that was huge. And then Frankie Solomon Jr., when there's enough film on you, okay, guess what happens? They kind of figure you out a little bit. So Frankie Solomon Jr. quite possibly didn't have the kickoff returns that he personally wanted. They were just better coverage down the field on him. But with the combination of him and Emmanuel Soren was fantastic at returning the kicks as well. So you had a double-headed guys right there receiving the kickoff. So, you know, Frankie Solomon Jr. did return some for kickoff returns. Emmanuel did the same thing, had some called back because of flags as well. So I think all in all, I think if they fix the kicking game that has been horrible ever since the existence of the Revolution, however, in the first year, the kicking game was more of a strategy more so than the guy couldn't kick. The second year, the guy couldn't kick. Third year, we had a little problems. The guy couldn't kick very well. So that's the only thing I look at as far as the special teams that has to improve, because if that facet of it doesn't enhance what's going on with the kick returns as well as the kickoff coverage.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree, and especially I almost sent Frankie a message to let him know that what it was. I agree with you. I think it's, you get enough tape on a guy, you can kind of get a game plan, and it's not that he's predictable. It's just there's only so many different directions you can turn when there's walls around you, and that's one unfortunate thing about the indoor game is with the walls around you, you can't kind of dance around the sideline so much because there is no real sideline.
Exactly, and the sidelines are invisible, and so when that makes, you know, the ball that's, you know, out there, maybe on a fumble, and someone going after it, it hits that dashboard, it's out of bounds. Looking at the facets of the rules of the game, you know, kind of looking forward to maybe some of those kind of facets of the game changing as well as far as the rules are concerned as we move into 2016 as well.
Right, absolutely, and I definitely agree with you about Darius Fudge as well. As not only was he RB1 and did a great job of that, him and Jordan as well, but Yeah, he's top gunner on the defensive side of special teams. He is always the first guy on top of the ball carrier, no matter where that's at on the field.
Yep, and that's an instinct that he built up, whether it was back in Wichita, you know, when he played for the Wichita Wild, and, you know, and a lot, I'm telling you, this guy had a whole year of, you know, getting ready. Now, this guy says that he doesn't watch film. I don't believe him, because I'll tell you the reason why. He can sit there and say that all day long, but to have the instinct to be around the ball where it needs to be at the times that he's able to make the tackles, someone's at least feeding him something. If he is not actually watching film, someone's definitely doing a good job, and that could have been Jen Welter or whoever the case who was watching that film to advise him of where he needed. But he did some kind of studying, whether it was fed to him or he was actually doing it himself.
Right, and I do want to give the this coaching staff a lot of credit, but we'll get into that in a second. But, yeah, Darius was the only guy that I had on the show that said he didn't watch film, and even his teammates went, are you sure? A couple of them questioned it. I think Darius saying that he doesn't watch film is like saying, you know, Brock Lesnar doesn't run sprints, or that Brett Favre never went to practice or something, you know. It's like, that was just in case the other team's listening. Sure, Darius, they're not, you're not watching anything.
He wanted to have that mental edge up on top of him, I have a feeling.
Maybe that was, because when I had Jordan Brown, who shares the backfield with him, and did an exceptional job. Because it seemed like if Darius was having a good day, then Jordan was the good 1-2 punch on the other side. And if Darius was having trouble, it seemed like Jordan could take over, and they would kind of swap as to who was getting most of the carries.
And think of this game as not a running game. And the Texas Revolution, even when the games didn't look well, there was only one game they abandoned the run. And the whole season, the only one game, and that was even in the championship game, they didn't abandon the run even when they were behind. So when you take a look at the importance, they made the running game a very important facet of the game plan, and they not only wanted to do it, they depended on it. And when you have a full year of a healthy Darius Fudge, it makes a big difference in the backfield for you as far as the Texas Revolution are concerned.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And let's see. Yeah, we talked about how they developed over the course of the season. By the end, they were starting to, I think, you know, it's like what you said, something we've talked about before. It's based off that good to great strategy, so to say, that it's not just getting the right people on the bus, it's getting them on the right seats on the bus. And I think by the end, they were starting to figure out the configuration that worked the best. Unfortunately, we just kind of ran out of games.
I think you're absolutely right. And when that game is in a championship game and you got a team, and hey, I'm not going to take anything away from the Bandits. So I'm going to tell you beat us. They beat us. And that's a good football team. You're talking about the reigning MVP at the quarterback position and Charles Dodal. They have a great running game as well. And here's another thing. You took a look at some of the stats. You take away the fact that the Texas Revolution were the best defensive team in the CIF. Well, the Bandits were top three. So this is a football team that knew how to play defense as well. And not only that, undefeated at home, just like the Texas Revolution. They had to win a couple of road games at the end of the season in order to secure that. Same thing with the Texas Revolution. So, you know, when you looked at both of those teams, they were almost mirrored images of each other. And which one got the best of them on that day is the one that won. And like I said, if that game was at the Allen Event Center, it could have been a totally different game.
Absolutely. I think it really did come down to that. We had kind of, offhanded spoke of that. It really come down to who was going to get the home game as to who we gave the edge to. And unfortunately, it wasn't us, and that's the way it played out.
And you can put it in a, you know, kind of look back up on your season, taking the step back and looking yourself on why that didn't happen. And really, I'll put it out there this way, Jeremy. This is for guys that are going to be back up on this football team next season. That will be something that they will never forget. They will remember the fact that they were one game from having that championship game at the Allen Event Center. So when they do hit the road and maybe they decide that maybe they shouldn't, or they don't have to put out a full effort, they'll think twice. I think this year was a good example of that one game that kind of bit them in the behind. And they will remember that going into the next year, to where when the new guys come in thinking that's going to be that way, the vets will step in and say, wait a minute. We know what's going on in this league. We know what's going on when you start thinking that way, and that affects us as a football team. And so the vets that stay around will have to learn to preach that to the young cats that walk into the door thinking that, hey, we're going to be okay, and just take a play or two off. And a play or two in this league itself, that can cost you a football game.
That it definitely can. I guess to kind of wrap special teams up, if you could, you know, we've kind of talked about the top players and the ones who even developed throughout the season. Who would you give kind of the rookie of the year to in the special teams department?
Oh, geez. Rookie of the year, in the special teams, I'm just going to, you know, half the time they're not out on the football field. You know,
right.
when that kickoff is going off, and I looked at the veterans that were on that football field. Okay, now if you're going to give it, Lindy Holmes was down there. You got to give that guy some credit. But saying he is a rookie, he's a rookie in this league, would be like saying that the guy's never played football when he played for the Washington Redskins. But you know, I don't think there's enough rookie of the year as far as special teams could be concerned. I think you have to go veteran for the most valuable player, and I put that as far as special teams all around. I'm going to give it to Emmanuel Sorin, because Emmanuel Sorin also was down on the coverages as well as returning the kicks. If we were just talking about just coverage, I give it to Darius Fudge, but all around special teams, I think I give it to Emmanuel Sorin.
Yeah, that's who I was going to bring up, either Lindy Holmes. He does have NFL experience and all, and we'll get into Taylor McCullough a little later as well. But what they brought to this game, they had to adapt to. But, yeah, I think I'd give it to Emmanuel Sorin for sure, because just like you said, when you talk overall package, if we divide it up, it's just like we're dividing up this team as, you know, an offense, defense, special teams. But if you go overall, total package, I got to give it to one guy and not be mad at myself, which I'll be mad at myself anyway because anybody deserves it. Yeah,
right.
I think Emmanuel Sorin would get the MVP. And we may do that as we go through. If there's – whether there's an outstanding rookie or not, we may go kind of MVP of each of these next two categories and then maybe an overall.
Definitely. That's cool.
I think that would be easier because it is hard to say, because when you say rookie of the year in the NFL, that means, okay, here's some 21 or 22-year-old kid who just came out of college, where a rookie in the IFL, the CIF, the arena leagues of any kind could be even 32 years old.
Correct.
But anything else to add on special teams?
Not on special teams, so we're good.
And now I'm really torn because the offense is always fun to talk about, but – this still, to me, is one of the most fun defenses I've ever watched for an entire season. So which way do you want to go?
Well, we could go defense. That's fine.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the top-rated defense. No matter what the stats say, to me, they were the top-rated defense for sure.
Yep.
And when you look at
this game itself, you know, that's the style of game that it is. That's kind of crazy when you look at the numbers. I'm sure you got those numbers in front of you.
I did at one point. For some reason, I can't find the current moment. Yeah, we talked about the technical issues before we came on today, and the technical bugs have bit us pretty good here. But just like when you have the technical issues, whether it be, you know, Wi-Fi connections that don't work, we'll continue to keep it professional here and just say the numbers are just staggering how good this defense is. And it starts,
absolutely,
to me with two people, because in the indoor league, yeah, you could still say there's three levels of defense, the front line, the linebackers, and then the defensive backs. But to me, it's the front line and it's second, third line are all in one. So I say to me it starts with the CIF Defensive Player of the Year, DeMario Dixon, on the front line, because he's the leader for sure there. And then you can't say defense in Texas without saying Frankie Solomon Jr. in the back.
Exactly. And toward the end of the season where I was looking, maybe leaning towards going Emmanuel Sorin on the defensive side, like in the secondary, Towards the end of the season, there were a couple of times where I seen a couple of plays where that he had a hard time with it, and I think teams kind of egged on to something right there. And so
right.
That being said, it put where I was thinking on who I would go ahead and pick as the top guy. It's hard to move away from a Frankie Solomon Jr. I mean, this is a guy that has done it year in, year out for this franchise, and frankly, this guy could be playing quite possibly on another football team. I don't know what his situation, if he's gotten calls from other leagues or stuff like that. That part I don't know. We don't talk like that. But if someone's not giving Frankie Solomon Jr. a look over in at least the AFL, someone's not paying attention about what's going on with this young man and what he's been able to do out on the football field, at least for the Texas Revolution.
Right, I absolutely agree. There's even like Matt said last week, he said just off the top of his head, without going back and looking at film or without even looking at who may have contacted him, for some reason, we're getting all kinds of random stuff today, for some reason. But, he said just from without even looking at his sheet as to people who have contacted him or people that said they would, that there was four or five off the top of his head that could be playing on different teams next year just based off what he knew.
Right.
But, I would agree. I mean, I could almost make a case for the entire roster at some point that they could be on another team next year.
Yeah, and in this game, and I hate to say it, but, they're going to go where they think that they can win, and it will all depend on how the feeling of this team is when it comes time. Obviously, the Texas Revolution have some guys in mind that they want on this football team for next year as well, and they will be in contact with them to try to get that all squared away immediately to where they can go ahead and at least go into this offseason with guys that they want that they got at least a signature on. So I know that that work is probably starting as we are speaking. Maybe if it hasn't really actively been going within the next week or so, we're going to hear about some guys that will be signing for this football team come next year.
Right, absolutely. And real quickly, we'll go through the a handful of the defensive players. And, just starting with the development, not only did they start off pretty well, but they ended, 10 times better than they started, and that which was crazy because they already started at, like probably a 6 or 7 out of 10, which in this league is very hard to do. It's very high scoring, and yet this defense kept everybody right around 35 points, which is unheard of. But
right.
Like I said, it definitely starts DeMario Dixon up front. You had Robert Williams up front as well. They added Jeff Claremont towards the end. It really, after a while, whether it was Malik Thompson or whoever that third guy was, the core of Williams and Dixon pretty much could do whatever they wanted to with the line.
Well, they were pushing guys around. The simple fact of the matter is when you were watching those guys, they were pushing guys around. And in this league, if you don't have an offensive line, where you lose games is right there. I mean, really, we talk about the importance of a quarterback in this league. Well, the quarterback isn't successful unless you've got that offensive line. The Texas Revolution, from the start of the season, had the biggest offensive line, and the reason why these defenders are so good, okay, is because they get to practice against that. And you can say whatever you want. That is a huge advantage for the Texas Revolution when they got an offensive line as good as they are. So when you got Dixon, when you got Williams, whether it's Thompson or who else steps in at that point up on that line, that right there puts them at an advantage going into a season way ahead of others because, remember, at the beginning of this year, we had a lot of big, huge dudes until it finally settled in on that offensive line to where they were happy with what they were getting. And then these guys were practicing. And when you're practicing against the best offensive line, of course when you go play some of these other teams, you're going to have success. And that's what we've seen. You've seen DeMario Dixon in the backfield faster than anybody in the IFL or in the CIF, there were a couple of players that were very good on the defensive side of the ball about getting into the backfield, but I don't think there was anybody quicker. And then you get the double of Robert Williams. Not only does this guy go out there on the defensive line, they brought him in the big package on the goal line stances to get him in. He's even got a couple of touchdown runs this year. So the versatility of that defense as well was really kind of cool as well when you watched it this season.
Absolutely, and you made a point that I've made in the last couple of years. A lot of times when you practice against the best, you become the best. You know,
yep.
Easiest example, Julian Edelman probably wouldn't be near anywhere close to being the top wide receiver in the league had he not practiced against Darrell Revis for the last year and a half.
I agree, and that is a very good point, especially when you're looking at, you know, what kind of teams that you're going to be looking at within this league itself. You can talk about the other leagues, how they got all the big players, and they got some of the best offensive lines up in the AFL, and if you want to consider these guys the stragglers or the guys that couldn't make it, that's fine, but at the same time, when you think about the offensive line, they were still able to get the quality from the offensive line, which in turn just it made the defense have to be better. And when you got a team that or an offensive line that makes you be better, so when you do actually go up against a team that's not anywhere close to the offensive line that they deal with on the day in, day out, it just makes it a lot easier to make plays, and that's what you've seen this year.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and we'll kind of transition into the back two lines, I guess, because if you look at the actual active roster, there's only one linebacker listed, of course, that would be Taylor McCullough. But you know, linebackers and defensive backs, you know, I do feel like teams tried to find certain weaknesses or tried to catch the Revolution in certain tendencies, whether it was Frankie, whether it was Saren, whether it was even Lindy Holmes or Taylor McCullough. They would try to say, okay, this guy tends to do this and run at them. It usually didn't work, but a few times they were able to beat us that way.
Well, it didn't work against Tyler McCullough, I'll tell you that right now. That guy not only did he meet expectations, he went so far beyond it that I'm going to tell you, and I don't want to put it on one guy, without a Tyler McCullough on this football team, or Taylor McCullough on this football team, we might have been on the road playing in the playoff game against the Wichita Force. That's what I think that you know, and I chose Tyler McCullough as my half-season player of the year because obviously he wasn't here the whole year long. But you cannot overlook the importance of what he did out on the football field for this football team.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and definitely whether it was players going to other opportunities or players that just were getting cut and not making the team or, you know, just in some cases, the revolving door that always happens in the indoor environment. All the role players that were brought in played an impact role to get the team where they got, and nobody played the bigger one than Taylor for sure. And talking to him, even on and off the show, you can just feel the intensity and the hunger he had. Like he said, he's hungry for more, and that would be the only thing in the back of my mind that I would always be thinking is that you're not sure if he's going to be back next year because somebody had to see the handful of games he played and go, why is he not on my roster?
Exactly. And that's what the problem is going into next year. As much as we want them, there's going to be other people that are going to say, and whether that's the IFL, AFL, or even for that matters, the Canadian Football League,
right,
Someone's going to get a look at this guy. And the way that he played the game was quite possibly first of all, the impact that he made as soon as he stepped out on the football field.
Oh yeah,
it was immediate. It was the first game he wins the defensive player of the week. Okay, that's how much of an impact this guy came in. First year in this league, never played the indoor game, and guess what? Sitting right there in people's faces, going, "Yeah, you're going to recognize me." And guess what? If you didn't get a look at Tyler McCullough this year, then you're not paying attention, and all the scouts are asleep because they're missing something.
No, I've told each and one of each and every one of these players and even a couple of the other people in the organization. I'd love everybody to stay at this big nucleus and us just continue to win year after year, but I never fault anybody for taking a better opportunity or trying to better yourself. And I would, as much as I would love to, go drop by practice like a lot of them want me to do, I think they just want to hit me a few times. But at the same time, I definitely see, especially on the defense, I see at least, I think, three players that could be playing at a higher level, and if they're not, then we need to make sure that somebody's checking their email.
Well, the Dallas Cowboys are looking, and I'm going to tell you that for right now, because when you have a Dallas Cowboy scout telling you and giving you pointers, and matter of fact, even one of the Dallas Cowboy scouts told DeMario Dixon, you got your butt handed to him, and it was a game where he had a good game. And you got to love these NFL scouts. They're going to tell you straight out, you got your ass kicked. And that in that game, I think he had like three sacks or everything, but some of the other fundamentals of the game. But it's nice to know at least someone is looking. So that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I guess just the side note on that was a home game you're talking about, correct?
Yep, that was a home game because they were right there and they were in the house.
Were they wearing their team apparel?
No, and seeing that's the thing, and I think that's a good thing in reality. You don't necessarily you don't want these guys getting big heads because they know why they're there, and really the simple fact of the matter is that there's an open invitation for them to be there. Whether or not they're going to be there, you don't know until that time when they start walking in the door. So you got to always be ready, and they could have even showed up late as well. So you always have to be 100%. And guess what? When you have a Devin Wyman, when you have a Terry Glenn, when you have these guys that have played into the NFL, when someone says, here, you need to see this film, people will now look. Tim Brown says, hey, you guys need to give this guy a little look. They're going to get looked at, and that's another thing about this football team as well, because, you know, no offense against Tommy Benizio, he said it best. No one's going to – Tommy who? Okay, this Tommy Benizio. Exactly. Tommy who? Exactly. You need someone with a little credibility, and they have that credibility with the Super Bowl champions, and you got Terry Glenn, and you got, Tim Brown, now Hall of Famer. You know, there's nothing more you could ask for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always love, especially at baseball games, no matter what level it is, I love sitting with scouts because, A, they don't sugarcoat it. B, they don't announce to the world, even though you know they're scouts. But it's just always one of my favorite places to sit. Even at football games, I've sat with a bunch of scouts before. And just to listen to them talk, because you're like, man, he really hammered him on that play. And they look and go, yeah, but his feet were terrible, his hands were in the wrong place, and he'll get murdered if he plays with us.
Exactly, and I, as a matter of fact, I was in the box where there was an NHL scout for the Allen Americans that was in there, and this guy, you know, we loved the guy, but at the same time, this guy tore into him and said, you know, there's a couple of things this young man's going to have to do in order to play for us before we can even consider him. That's the kind of thing that these guys need to hear so they can quite possibly make that dream come true when they make that next step.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if I have yet on the show, but do want to give the shout-out and congratulations to the Allen Americans. What is it, three in a row, four in a row now?
Three in a row. It's amazing. Good stuff over there over at the Allen Event Center. I mean, we have indoor soccer that's incredible. We have the hockey, the indoor hockey, and then of course we have indoor football. Then we even get it's the equivalent to the Final Four, but in the different division that plays there. You know, so it's kind of cool about the Allen Event Center how they can put together. And they are able to host some great stuff going on.
Oh, yeah. The Allen Event Center is like the Gwinnett Center over this way, where, all three of the major pro teams in the Atlanta area are getting new stadiums. I just heard the Hawks' new owner say it the other night that Phillips is getting redone. So, but you look and go, well, which arena is not getting redone? Oh, yeah, where the Gwinnett Gladiators play hockey, where all the major circuses and events and concerts over in the Gwinnett Arena. That's a great place to go, just like the Allen Event Center is where all these great things are happening right now. People are going to take notice and realize that's the place to be.
Yep, definitely.
So I guess real quickly, either if there's a rookie that really stood out, or who would you say the defensive MVP is, or at least maybe the top two, because it may be a no-brainer on the top.
Well, the no-brainer is obviously DeMario Dixon. He dominated this year. And there's a difference between playing well and dominating. And the dominating fashion that he played with this year, if that's another thing. If you missed that or did not call that, or if you were voting, someone wasn't paying attention. And that's what, so he got the proper, I think they got the proper defensive player of the year. I don't know much about all the other rookies, but we also got our rookie of the year and Robert Williams out there on that defensive line as well. So it's hard to look at a guy at getting the accolades as a rookie and playing as well as he did as far as that. So when I look at the defense, if I look on the defensive line, I'll go with DeMario Dixon. And as far as the defense as a whole, I think I would even still stick there with the defense because, like you said, guys being shuffled in and out, moving from one team to the next, really you look in that backfield, you see Frankie Solomon Jr., and nothing against Frankie Solomon Jr. He was just kind of outshined by the defensive line this year. But you can say what you want about Frankie Solomon Jr., but that guy puts in a solid year every single year. But I think I give it to DeMario Dixon.
Yeah, that was the word I was going to use with Frankie, was solid. He was absolutely solid, absolutely
yep.
Continues to get better and better. But DeMario Dixon just went out and took the crown. And, I mean, there were times when if you watch games, because sometimes I don't always watch the ball. I've just, maybe it's from doing media for so long now, or maybe
right.
It's just being around these scouts and coaches. I watch the lines a lot of times, or I watch a certain player. There's times DeMario had he was triple teamed and still got in the backfield.
Exactly, and that's what, and he's pushing the triple team around as well. So yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, he'll take his right paw because it was like going against the Bears. Right paw and one guy hits the deck. The next guy's getting pushed backwards while the third guy's trying to chip him, and he's just walking over the top of him.
Yep.
If he's here next year, and maybe a couple, hopefully a lot of this nucleus is, but if not, obviously wish him the best in the world, and it just means I'll have that many more favorite teams on top of the ones we have. But yeah, if they can keep DeMario and Robert, and I don't think it'd matter who the third person is, really. That duo alone could take out most of the offensive lines in this league.
I agree, 100%.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely agree. DeMario gets the defensive MVP, although there's some good honorable mentions, but he just was over and above, exceeded any expectations anybody could have come up with.
Exactly.
Moving on to the offense now, and we will agree to disagree as far as us as a whole with the CIF voting on the offensive player of the year. I guess we can't win them all, but,
yeah.
I could have made a strong case that Robert Kent Jr. should have been in at least honorable mention.
Yeah, he was second in the voting as far as that was concerned, and there was – but at the same time, you got the end result of the championship game kind of makes you – even though you still want to say, Robert, well, the MVP won the championship, so, it kind of made its worked its way out. That having been said, though, looking at this offense compared to years past, the efficiency of the quarterback position is so huge on this football team. We're talking about four interceptions the whole season long. Now, that's almost unheard of in indoor football as well. So when
right.
you got a guy that is very wise with the ball, knows when to throw it away, knows what kind of ball to throw in order to get it where it needs to get, doesn't leave the floaters out there too much. Matter of fact, two of the interceptions that he had were tipped at the line. So you look at that in reality and go, well, quite possibly could have only been two interceptions. You're talking about a guy that is efficient at the quarterback position, and I'm going to tell you that as great as he is, that comes from coaching. Coaching a guy to be able to make the right decisions at the right time in this league or any of these indoor leagues, they've got to be coached to make that decision. They're pretty smart going in there, but sometimes guys want to make that play. They're so eager to make that play, they miss on something. This coaching staff did not let that happen. So as well as Robert Kent played this year, I'm going to tell you that most of that success of Robert Kent has to come from the coaching, because if that guy went out there and did it on his own, that guy's probably throwing about, you know, at least 7 or 8 interceptions at a minimum throughout the season. So, as much as I want to give the MVP to Robert Kent, I'd have to give an honorable mention to the coaching staff to be able to teach him, and to where he actually picked up on it and learned from it, more so than shrugged him off and said, yeah, I probably should throw this one away, or I should probably throw that one away. This is a guy that actually did it.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. And actually, I've got a three-way tie for who I would give the MVP to, and I'll get to that, but... You know, because, I mean, Robert Kent Jr. by far, to me, is one of the most talented quarterbacks, especially in the indoor environment. He understands the game. Like you said, the coaching was able to kind of get him on a path, too, to where it's almost that Peyton Manning mentality. You know, Peyton doesn't throw a lot of interceptions. It's because he's been coached up enough by his dad, by his brother, by other coaches to say, hey, if you don't have a pass, put it 3 rows deep. That's fine. Right. I don't care about you throwing it out of bounds. I don't want you throwing to the other team.
And that right there shows the mentality of a team that will go ahead and let that guy make that kind of decision. You know, yes, in this league it's about stats, but, man, you got to know when to throw away the ball and how you do it. He left one lame duck out there that he was trying to get rid of, and I just wanted to just hop out of my seat and grab him myself. That was only one play all year long. I would have said that the way he got rid of it was quite possibly not the way I would have wanted to see it. But the rest of the time, making the decisions at the right time, not panicking. Say what you want. I mean, you got these defensive linemen barreling down on you, and this guy didn't even look like it bothered him, and that is so huge too. So you got the combination of the coach teaching him what to do, and then you got the maturity of the guy to be able to make the right decision at the right time. It's so huge for a football team.
Oh yeah, absolutely, and I know that exact pass you're talking about. That he doesn't throw any ducks at all, but when that one went up, I literally wanted to hop on a plane, come running over there, maybe come down in a parachute or something, or a zip line. Maybe I could borrow one from Jackson DeVille, since he's no longer doing it, and just grab that one out of the air and go, how about we do that one again?
Yeah, exactly.
But that
happened so minimal this year compared to years past at the quarterback position, where, you know, I don't know. I think of sometimes quarterbacks in the indoor league, whether it's the AFL or anything, I remember the days of being a Cardinal fan, and I'm talking about the NFL Arizona Cardinal fan, with their quarterback situation, sitting on the edge of my seat going and praying every time he threw the football. And I didn't have that feeling this year from our quarterback in our league compared to the years past. I did. I was always hoping and praying that the ball got where it needed to be, and we didn't really have to worry about that this year, which is kind of nice.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree. And I'll get to it in a minute about top plays, because to me there's one offensive one that I can't get out of my head, and there's one defensive one for sure, but I'll get into that in a second. As far as the offensive MVP, I think you got to give it to the offensive line. No matter which three configuration it was, I think by the end it was Cameron Young, Michael Wormley, and Roy Richard for sure. But without that offensive line, I don't know that Fudge and Jordan Brown would have had the rushing years they did. Robert Kent wouldn't have had the time to plan out what he wanted to do. The receivers wouldn't have had time to be open. I think it all started and ended with that line. So I would
definitely
give the MVP to them.
I think you're right when you look at it, because all things goes through the offensive line. Your quarterback can't throw unless he has time. Your running back can't get through the hole unless the hole's made for him. And I love Darius, and I love Kent, but I was going to tell you that I was going to pick the offensive player of the year, I was picking Michael Wormley. Michael yep. Wormley, quite possibly, and he caught his first pass ever, by the way, you know, for a touchdown, which was kind of cool for that kid. When I first met Michael Wormley, you know, Michael Wormley, even you know, before the season, this guy was all business, man. You know, and I'll give you an example. I can giggle about it now because I never met the cat before. But we're sitting there getting ready for our pictures to be taken, you know, for the programs and for them to put it in. It's really kind of an honor to be there for that. It's kind of nice to have your picture and put into the program. And this guy wanted no part of it. This guy just wants to play football. I don't want to smile for the camera. I'm here to play football. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, what is wrong with this dude? Well, there was nothing wrong with this dude. This dude wanted to play football. He wasn't interested in the other stuff. He wanted to be an offensive lineman for the Texas Revolution. So when I first saw that compared to what I've seen through the regular, and I put my hand on his shoulder. Actually, I had to reach up to put my hand on his shoulder, and congratulate him on his first, his first touchdown catch. This guy, he doesn't know anything about, running routes or anything else, and he had the opportunity to do so. But I think an unsung hero, a very quiet year. I give the MVP, and I know no one, not too many people would agree with me, but I'm going to give it to Michael Wormley.
No, because from talking to a handful of the offensive players and just things that they say all the time, and if I got a chance to talk to Robert Kent Jr., I'm sure he would say he would give it to him as well.
Yep, if you weren't with, I mean, I'm going to tell you right now, a healthy Darius Fudge all year long, I'm telling you right now, that was so huge. We get him halfway through the year last year. Wasn't really 100%, but he went out there and he gave what he had. This year, I'm going to tell you right now, I know for a fact that he felt so much better about this year compared to the year before that, when he came in, did a little time before the end of the season. This guy is a guy that has put it together for this football, whether it was with Wichita or with the Allen Wranglers when he got hurt. I remember the play that this guy hurt. Guy, he had a great season and he got hurt in the playoffs on a pretty much a whistle, should have been a whistle dead play when he got hurt where he ripped his knee. So, I remember that. I mean, so Darius Fudge, like you said, you can pick about three guys on this offense and be able to say, that's the MVP of the offense. And if you said Darius Fudge, I wouldn't argue with you very much.
Yeah, I really could. I could have picked anybody on there for sure. And we'll get into possible things for next year as well. But I know for one thing, it'll be good to have Brett Reiss Jr. back on the field and healthy.
Oh gosh. You look at his stats. You look at his stats this year, in six ball games, this guy is leading the league. He's in the top five of almost every stat for wide receivers, okay? So that's what it means. If this guy would have been healthy for the play, I'm telling you right now, I'm talking about a different. I'm talking about the Texas Revolution having a championship ring wearing today. Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
If you look at this football team this year, the places where they really suffered in one of, and it was because of injuries, or at least in the playoffs for the kicking team. But the fact that you don't have Brett Reiss out on the football field for what he did in six football games for you, you're talking in eight other games where he is not there. It was so obvious. It was that sore thumb. Now, I don't want people to think that I don't think that we've got a good core wide receivers after that. But when you take Brett Reiss off of it, you're talking about a guy where defense has got to plan against somebody. Okay, when Brett Reiss is out on the football field, the defenses have to spot down on this guy and figure out how they're going to stop Brett Reiss. And no offense against the other wide receivers on this football team, they didn't bring that kind of attention because of the fact that where Brett Reiss's talent was compared to the guys that were left after he left, you just didn't have to plan as much. And it's not a cut down. It just tells you how good Brett Reiss was when he's out on the football field and the defense has to say, if we don't watch this guy, this guy's going to burn us. And he did it all year long.
Yeah, absolutely. And not only was he not only did he become the wide receiver one for sure, especially with Clinton Solomon obviously playing in Las Vegas this year with the AFL, and
yep.
he actually continues to still have he stepped up and become one of the best targets out there. So shout out to Clinton on that one. But when I had Brett Reese on the show, it was right about the time we thought he was coming back from the injury. He ended up making the announcement on the show that actually there was a stress fracture or something involved, and
right.
he wouldn't be able to play the rest of the year. Well, he actually joined you in the booth a couple times, and I told him on the show, I said, you know, you might want to think about media somewhere down the road because of the way he handles interviews and stuff like that. And then hearing him in the booth with you, I would have thought that was your co-host if I didn't know better.
And not only that, during the season when Terry Glenn, he was actually up there helping Terry Glenn. Now, folks, Terry Glenn doesn't need help, okay?
No.
But I'm going to tell you, I think that was a valuable asset to Terry Glenn out there as far as, so maybe not completely recognizing a lot of things because of the way the indoor game is played. He was up there, and he was literally maybe 15 feet away from me with Terry Glenn on my right-hand side where they're calling plays, and he's letting them know about certain patterns, and when they're about ready to play, I glance over, I see him telling what they have to be looking for and things like that. It was nice to have him up in the booth with Terry Glenn to help him out. And, you know, Terry Glenn is an NFL wide receiver, okay? This now went to smaller windows, smaller fields, so he needed to get a feel up on it. And it was a good thing that I think he had Brett Reese right there with him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I look forward to seeing him healthy because if what he did in six games and he's almost leading the league in every category, imagine what a
yep.
full season he could do.
Absolutely.
I kind of said something about it earlier. Is there a offensive play that sticks out in your head that just either you can't get it out of your head or it was just that much better than the rest of them?
Well, there was one play where I call him Jeff Kent. I watch too much baseball. When Robert Kent had the ball, he was running for the end zone. Okay, and he got hit and he fumbled the ball, and the ball actually bounced up right into the hands of the wide receiver Stevenson, and he went in for uh-huh. the touchdown. That's the one that sticks out to me because Stevenson was doing what he was supposed to do, which was blocking. So when he got him off the block, I watched this play again. He got off the block, and that ball just happened to be right there in his hands, and he was able to bring it in for the touchdown. That was the huge thing. But that's the play for the Revolution. The play that sticks in my mind wasn't even done by the Texas Revolution. It was done by Nate Davis. Nate Davis of the Venom.
Are you talking about the one against us?
Where he ran around
for about an hour and a half.
This,
yeah.
Yeah, they had him in his arms. He just ripped out of it. Casey Peters throws the ball after everybody thinks that we got him in the end zone and then throws a strike for the touchdown. That's the one play, and that was coming from the Gladiators. And you know, and not only that, the Cleveland catch on the first game in the Gladiator where he goes over the dasherboard, incredible catch and incredible
yes.
concentration. Those are the three games that plays that stuck out to me this year. And I wish there would have been more that really kind of stuck out. There was a good run by Darius Fudge this year as well.
Yes.
I just forget what team it was against.
Him and Jordan both had a couple of them that just were unreal. But
yeah,
offensively, the one I'm going to go to, and it's the one that the replay has been up on TexasRevs.com, and it's been all over the internet now. It's the one where Robert Kent scrambles out of the pocket to his right, and where the camera is, I think it's John Tavares who had the camera actually, because it seemed like his camera worked. He is running dead at the sideline and somehow throws this like crazy dart that kind of goes down the sideline, hooks in, goes right in the edge of the end zone to forgot the receiver. It was
I think it was Godine.
I think it was Ronald Godine. That just, when you go back and when they even slow it down, it looks like when you actually fire an arrow. And a lot of people think arrows go straight. I assure you they do not. They wiggle the whole way through. That's what makes them so hard to shoot. Go and look at that. That ball moved three or four different ways. It looks like a major league pitch from like Randy Johnson or something. It moves so much. But yep. I couldn't believe that he threads it in and out of three or four different people, including some other receivers who just one of them happened to stop and look at it like, that's really pretty.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice to be able to have the accolades from the defense on. You know, what are you going to do? You know, it's yeah. one of those places where you go, geez, what the heck? There's nothing I could have done on that play except for what I did. And, you know, I understand their frustration on that play.
And I agree. My unbiased take for sure, I agree that the other two plays you named that were against us were phenomenal plays. And that it was a fun season to watch for sure. Is there a defensive play that sticks out?
A defensive play that sticks out. There was a play that was made by Hicks where mm-hmm. he picked up the interception, and he just wasn't sure where to go with the ball. And then he hands it off to Frankie Solomon Jr., and they run it in for the touchdown. That's the one that defensively that sticks out to me, because and I don't think it was the fact that he was trying to be unselfish. I think he just wanted the person that had the better knowledge of the game to have the ball
right.
in that situation. And when I look at that, that's a veteran move from an NFL player admitting that, hey, I don't necessarily know where to go with this thing, so let's just get it to someone who can get it there. And I'll tell you, I love the fact that Lindy Holmes was on this football team this year. I think he brought a lot of maturity into that backfield as well. So that's the one that sticks out to me as far as defensively is concerned.
Now, is that the one where there was one, I thought it was Frankie, but it could have been Trent Hicks even, that basically just snatched it right out of the wide receiver's hand and took off with it?
That's Frankie Solomon. That's a Frankie. That's actually, I think he needs to trademark that. I'm telling you right now,
that's not the first time I think
this guy can get the ball out of anybody's hands on the wide receivers. And if you're a wide receiver in this league and you're going up against Frankie Solomon Jr., when you catch that ball, you better have a vice on it, because Frankie Solomon, if he gets the opportunity to strip it out of your hands, he's gonna do it. Especially if he knows he's got a little help, he will take that risk and he will grab it. And he did that about five or six times this year.
Yeah, that's the one in particular. He should trademark that. He'd just call it the snatch and grab or something like that.
Yep, something like that. That's a new T-shirt for him, the snatch and grab. I think that's I'll let him know about that. He'll probably like that.
He probably will. In fact, shout out to him for his, I believe it's his flag football team, who seem to win tournaments every time they go. So, you know,
yep.
maybe the next tournament, the name of the team will be Frankie's Snatch and Grabs or something.
Yeah, that's a great nickname. I like it.
Mr. Snatch and Grab. We may have to give him that one. I bet he'll like it, because he works out pretty well, too. So it's,
yep.
Let's see. That's pretty much all I was going to get to with this team. Talk about a little bit next year. We've talked about, you know, some of the things, some of the players and stuff, but what do you see this team needing to do for next season as far as progressing and continuing to do the things they do?
Keeping the coaching staff. Out of everything, and even if they don't get the names that they want, I think they need to keep their coaching staff. The success of this football team, I made a post earlier today because it finally got on my nerves. When you talk about a team that has to do what's best for business, okay,
right.
Sometimes that goes against what you're seeing out on the football field or what you want to see on the football field. Does Tommy Benizio want to fire his coach midseason? Of course not. But what was best for business? Obviously, I think it was something that needed to happen because of the situation. So I think the fact that they got the coaching staff in, and this team could have very easily folded with that, saying, well, you know, we had a midseason change of coach. Devin Wyman didn't let that happen. Jen Welter didn't let that happen. These guys were not going to let those excuses jump in there. Notice how I only named two, because that's only two that are left, and they lose Brett Bowers, when the coach goes down to San Angelo, so Brett Bowers was out of there, so they lose him. They lose a lot of that coaching staff. Larry Centers, unfortunately, that's that little experiment didn't work out very well. I think that was more of a commitment thing, as far as he had a lot of prior commitments where he couldn't fully put into it. There were a lot of things that could have ended up happening that they could have used as excuses this year. Devin Wyman was the consistent in that. Jen Welter, and people, hey, you can laugh about Jen Welter all you want. I'm going to tell you right now, I've been right there when she's talking to those guys. I'm going to tell you right now, those guys respect that woman. And if you're not there and you don't see it firsthand, you don't get it. But when you're there and you're seeing it firsthand, this girl, I mean, she stands up to mid-chest to
right.
most of these guys, and she's out there grabbing jerseys and letting them know where they need to be. This woman's not afraid of those men, and she's not afraid to coach them. And I think Matt made the explanation. I finally got an opportunity to see what she actually does for this football team and how she prepares. I'm going to tell you right now, the simple fact of the matter, Jen Welter, when she is in the game, when she is in the zone, knows what's coming out of her way. When we were on our way to San Angelo, she told me about five or six things that I could look for out on the football field. And guess what? All six of them showed up, and she said, this is how you beat it. And guess what? That's how they beat it. So this woman knows coaching. This woman knows football, and if anybody thinks that she's a joke, and if you wanted to think last year was a publicity stunt with her playing, that's fine. But as a football coach, I'm going to tell you right now, that was no joke at all. That woman knows exactly what she's doing, and full kudos to her, because she could have been laughed at all, but and the guys could have looked at her and say, get this chick out of here. Those guys didn't do that, and that's nothing but that comes from the head coach too, saying, hey, listen, that's your coach, listen to your coach. You know, so I think what they got to do is they got to keep that coaching staff in play, and I think they got to be able to grow from that as well, because of the veterans that have learned up underneath the system. So when the newbies come in, not only can the coaches coach, the veterans can coach, because they know what's coming from the coaches themselves.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. And the only thing I would add to that is find a kicker. And
yeah.
I actually have a few numbers. I may pass them to Matt when we get off of here, of people that are out my way who currently have not had teams who have NFL experience. So they can kick and punt, even though there's no punting.
Yep, there you go.
But, as far as Jen, I wanted to just throw this out here real quickly and get your opinion, because I've said mine before on the End Zone Falcon Zone show we do here on Impact Media. I don't know if she'll be the first or not, because it's really hard to predict something like that, but do you see her as a coach in the NFL one day?
I will tell you that what the NFL is that that probably wouldn't happen. For her to coach, that, you know, I can see that, but you got to talk about the NFL being an old
right.
boys club. And unfortunately, the NFL is an old boys club. And unfortunately, I don't foresee that ever happening because of the style of play that the NFL is. Okay, you're talking about the quote-unquote major leagues. So as far as coaching is concerned, and this is no snatch against her, I think the fact that she's a woman stands in her way of being able to be a head coach. But this woman being some kind of coach on a football team on the NFL level, I'm going to tell you right now, I wouldn't put that past Jen Welter at all. And maybe when I first met her years ago, I thought maybe that could have been a joke. After this year, she had my respect when she went out there and she played with the guys. I mean,
right.
you know, that being able to pop buck out of the, hey, she gained my respect as soon as she took the first pop. But I think I gained so much more respect for her as a coach, and the way that she handled herself this year is completely and utterly perfect, and it is the right thing for the Texas Revolution.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to take either, Bruce Arians, who has mentioned stuff about female coaches in the NFL and that he thinks it could be the future. It'll either take somebody like that with some clout, or
yep.
it's going to take just a super progressive, feather ruffler of a NFL owner to just go, you know what, I'm going against the grain here and saying she's the qualified person. I want the quality here, not just the face.
And whatever team does it, the first to ever do it, they will hear the biggest heat about it forever. But once it becomes a norm, once they get in there and go, well, maybe this was not the worst idea we ever had, once that is looked upon and is respected, then I think we can see that. But we will definitely need more women out there like a Jen Welter. All you got to look at it, you know, look at some of these coaches. Some of these coaches never took a snap in the NFL, but guess what?
Right.
They had coaches in the NFL. So that right there tells me that a woman can do what they're doing.
Right, absolutely. And I'll just throw out the you never know, she may have to go through Canada to make it work, but I could definitely see that happening.
Yep, and I think it would be good for the game. I think there's something about progression that has to happen, and sometimes that progression won't happen in the major league because of the way that it's ran. But you get an opportunity to be able to establish change. The best place to do it is right here in our leagues, when any of these indoor leagues. I think it could happen, as far as the coaches are concerned.
Absolutely. And now that we've got our off-season to-do list out of the way, I know you have some league-related news because we were kind of discussing some of it earlier, but I do know about, because one of the former players from the North Texas Crunch, they obviously folded part of the way through the season this year, but one of the players alerted me as soon as he knew they had a new owner. They're now called the Marshals, and as we were saying before, they're actually going to join the CIF along with another team, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and just to let you know, I knew about this at the beginning of the year. I was talking to the head coach, Larry Hendricks, of the North Texas Crunch at the preseason game that the Texas Revolution said. Mm-hmm. He said, hey, you watch, we're going to be playing in Mesquite by next year, and we'll be playing in this league. Guess what? He was on it. He told me exactly what's going on as far as that was concerned. So I kind of knew something was up. Now, I didn't know if it was actually going to come to pass, because I was even involved with a team that was trying to get started in Mesquite a couple of years ago. So it was more in the fact of making sure that you have the right backer, you got the right people in place, and the ones that financially are going to be the ones that cut the check. And they got that guy over there, so he's the owner of the Mesquite Arena now. And with all the talk about indoor football for the last 3 years, and I was a part of that, you know, getting into the ear of the mayor of Mesquite talking about indoor football. Ever since that I brought that up, he said, man, I want that team here. And we tried our best to obviously get it there, and it didn't happen. That having been said, the fact that there's a football team, an indoor football team, playing at the Mesquite Arena in 2016 doesn't surprise me one bit.
Yeah, and from what I've gathered, because I've had a couple conversations with the player that's currently on that roster.
Are you talking to Harvey?
No. This is Shane.
Oh, okay. Got it. I know who you're talking about.
I'd about to say, I'm pretty sure you do. He's in a lot of the groups that you have on Facebook and everything. Really good dude. I talk to him probably weekly. But he said from the time he first met the owner and the way the owner described how he wanted to run things, he knew things were going to be up and up, and he was really excited, and so were the rest of the players.
Yep, and they got a dude by the name of Cedric Harvey. That guy's a badass. He's a good player. Matter of fact, he was the one that took down Jen Welter. He tackled Jen Welter on her first carry. That guy's a badass. And I was, you know, if our defense wasn't stacked, I was going to say that's a guy that we probably need to keep in our back pocket. Now, also, just to let you know, the Texas Revolution, if they wanted to be a jerk of an organization, they could have made sure that this team did not play in the CIF. There's certain rules and regulations,
right,
and some teams, they have the opportunity to say yay or nay to. And this team, they have to be 30 miles away, and this team is like 26. So if Tommy Benizio wanted to play the jerk card, he could have just kept that and said no team in Mesquite. However, he's all about the league. He's all about the success of the league, and he's all about the success here in the area. We create a market that's close enough to each other. They can go back and forth to each other's games, too. So that's huge, too. So, you know, kudos to Tommy Benizio for letting that happen, because if he wanted to, he could have said, nah, that's not going to work for us.
Exactly. I haven't gotten to meet him in person yet, but he strikes me as somebody who doesn't let ego get in the way of progression.
No, and sometimes making those decisions, whether it's going from the IFL to the CIF, whether it's
right.
taking care of your coach in midseason, he will do what's best for business, and sometimes that doesn't really always work best for what's out on the football field at any given time. But when it comes to – we still got to remember that this indoor football team is a business first. Before they can be anything else, they got to be a business. So, and he treats it that way. And I'm going to tell you, I've been in on meetings with him. This guy knows what he's talking about.
Absolutely. And do you know any other league stuff you can talk about at the current moment?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
I said, do you know any other league-related news, anything about the CIF or any of the teams coming in or anything like that, any rule changes? Right.
No, well, I haven't heard anything that would necessarily be something that you could say that's going to happen to you. As far as, you know, these are all things that are going to be talked about over the league meetings and things of that sort. I have my own personal wants on what we could expect out on the football field, and not only – I have my wishes, like the one, the free ball hitting the side. I mean, it's on the dasher for a reason. You can't consider that out of bounds if the ball's active, but they do. So there are certain things out there as far as some of the rules that I would like to see changed as far as that. But teams, there's lots of talks about some of the other teams as far as rumors are concerned. You know, I've heard rumors about a team in Joplin that might be starting up, but that's been an ongoing rumor, so I don't know if it'll actually happen or not. There's been teams that are in the IFL that might join. I've been hearing rumors about Green Bay, even mid-season about Green Bay joining in, pretty much all set. And with the change at the general manager position for the Bemidji Axemen, they were kind of saying that, yes, they were going to be in the IFL, but now since he's not there, there might be some changes as far as that's concerned. And a couple other teams like Austin, there's a team in Austin that says that they were going to play in 2016, but those haven't been finalized. So there's a lot of stuff in the CIF that you can look at. My hopes is that this will be a 16-team league. I will be happy with 12, which is where I think it might end up at. So that'd be, you know, that lots of news, though. You're going to hear lots of rumors and everything else here in the off season, and right now you're hearing a lot. It's only going to get worse as we get close to January.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I just know that you know a handful more people than I do, so I hadn't heard anything currently. So I was making sure we've covered everything in case something was out there.
You betcha. There's a lot of other stuff that is going on there that I've been hearing, but I haven't got confirmation on the rumor itself even being a thought. So there's other stuff I know, but I'm trying to get that clarified to see if the rumor has any mustard behind it.
Exactly. And, of course, the fans know, and if they don't, we'll tell them now. Just, you know, even though this is the season finale of Impact Media's Revolution Zone, me and Sonny have stuff going year-round. Anytime something big happens in the CIF or anytime something happens with the Revolution, you can bet one or both of us are going to be right back on here to tell you about it.
Absolutely.
To explain it to you, answer your questions, whatever we need to do, because trust me, just because there's not a regular schedule currently set up to talk about the Revolution doesn't mean we're not going to be the first ones to try to break it to you.
Absolutely.
And I guess that moves us to the last and final part here. And like I said, it's a little sad, but I know I can pick up the phone and call any of you awesome people, including yourself, Sonny, that I've gotten to speak to a lot this year. But it's kind of sad this being the season finale. But at the same time, I'm happy to say that this was just a great season in general, and it was just a blast getting to know everybody and getting to get on here and talk like this every week.
Yeah, and we expanded our coverage even into a pregame show. With our coverage on Blog Talk Radio, we only get 3 hours to bring you the game. So doing a pregame show, we actually have to do a whole show, which opened up a lot of things for me to be able to do it. You know, my shortest time for a pregame show this year was an hour. My longest was 2 hours and 20 minutes. So,
yes.
You know, we get the opportunity to be able to talk about this in depth, which, you know, it kind of reminds me of the NFL, you know, breaking down, you know, an NFL team, you know, looking at certain things at each position and things of that sort. So it kind of, when I was able to do the pregame show, it kind of made it a lot more fun as well, and also gained a lot more listeners as well as far as the pregame show and then carrying them over into the actual game itself.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And before I get you to answer Matt Lunsford's questions, I did notice on the TexasRevs.com that the Revolution will be part of a Independence Day celebration. You can they're going to have some, I think, players and coaches and members of the organization. They got the information on TexasRevs.com, but you can go down and meet some of the players and people in the organization. They're going to have some skills competition set up and stuff like that, so you know, go throw some passes to your favorite receiver, or you know, go try to outrun the reach of DeMario Dixon. I'm not sure who's going to be there exactly. They haven't confirmed that yet, but you know, it's a good opportunity to go down there and celebrate independence and meet the Revolution.
Yeah, it should be a kick in the pants.
Oh yeah, you never know, maybe they can recruit for next year.
Yeah.
you never know yep. Who shows up to these things. But as what become one of the more popular parts of Revolution Zone, where I would have the previous guests come up with questions for the current guest, and of course it all started with you at the very beginning, so to bring it full circle, I had the previous guest, Mr. Matt Lunsford, come up with a handful of questions for you, Sonny, and if you're ready, we'll get right into them.
Jump right in. Let's see what they say.
Trust me, there are three exceptional ones that I would expect at like a press conference, and then there's the fun one.
Okay. All right, go with it.
Number one, Matt wants to know, given that you moved from Arizona and having an affinity for the AFL, what are the big differences between the CIF and IFL from the AFL, and, you know, what makes those better?
Well, I will tell you exactly what it is. As a guy that attended a lot of Arizona Rattler games and compared to the Texas Revolution games, if I wasn't in the booth where I'm at, I will tell you that even the access is better in our leagues. I mean, the AFL, you get access. You're awful close. Some AFL teams won't let you on the field after the game. I think the biggest part about this league, and even in the IFL, I'll give them the kudos as well, is getting the fans involved. I mean, the AFL kind of cuts you off like they're, you know, kind of a little bit too big for that kind of stuff. And this league and the IFL doesn't allow that to happen. It makes you a part of the league and part of the team, and you feel something. You know, I as a guy, I could have went out and interviewed out on the football field. Anybody could have done that. It wasn't just me. I mean, Sonny Clark has access to it if he ever wanted to do it as much as he wanted to. But you as a fan could actually go, and you don't need credentials or anything. Go out and talk to your players. You don't get that in the AFL because you have to have certain requirements that would get you out there, or if you knew someone, then you could get out there. But just everybody allowed on the football field, I think that is the biggest difference and the reason why I like this league more so than the AFL. Even if they had the team down here that played in the AFL, if I had my choice of which one I'd go to the Revolution because of the access to the players and how you can feel so close to them.
I would absolutely agree. As somebody who has watched a lot of the different leagues like that, I would absolutely agree. The AFL does feel a little disconnected sometimes as far as the access.
Yes, and when you don't have access, you got to, especially on this level, you got to make the fans feel like they're a part of something. And the right. AFL sometimes doesn't give you that opportunity to feel like you're a part of it. And if the Texas Revolution had that football game at home, they won the championship, everybody would be invited out on the football field. They're not going to stop you from going out there. And you just don't get that in too many of the other leagues as far as the AFL is concerned. Hell, you don't even get that in high school, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I know. As somebody who's been escorted off many high school fields, I think statute of limitations is gone. Whether I deserved it or not, yeah, it's that access even at that level.
Exactly.
If not, I believe my attorney friend has not been busy lately, so I gave him something to do.
There you go.
Question number two. How have you seen the Revolution organization transition from nothing to something coming from two awful seasons on the turf to a championship game, and how does the business side relate to what the fans see on the field?
Okay, first of all, I've talked about this before, and if you've seen the videos, I've talked about this football team coming from the Phoenix, from the ashes of the Allen Wranglers, okay? Up comes a Phoenix that is the Texas Revolution. Hey, are the Texas Revolution perfect? No. Is there mistakes that are made sometimes? Hell, they'll even tell you that. But the fact that they were able to learn from the mistakes and how they were able to grow and what they learned from one league to the next going into the and keeping it about business, yeah, you look at it, where they are compared to they were. They're so far ahead of where they were, and quite possibly the fact that the bumps and bruises that they learned along the way that made this year so successful is because of what they knew what not to do last, you know, this year compared to the years before. So sometimes learning from your mistakes improves your franchise 100%, and it obviously showed up on the field, on the football field, but it also showed in the front office of the Texas Revolution as well. The different, when we talk about a different attitude and a different feeling, it did start day one with Wendell Davis. He brought the different attitude, and the simple fact of the matter is that this was a team that was ready to bring in the organization to where it needed to be, which is definitely better than in that case, 3-11 when they played 14 games in the IFL. It's definitely a different attitude that where that's not acceptable. What is acceptable is getting into the playoffs and not making excuses on things that could happen, but being able to get from it. So, and plus the fact, if you take a look at this franchise itself compared to any other out there. Now, granted, I don't have the access to any of the other football teams as much as obviously I do with the Texas Revolution. But I'm going to tell you, this is a team, when they say that they are leading by example and they are doing it via faith with their faith, there's no other team that I think within this league that even holds a candle to that thinking. You see a lot of teams praying out on the football field, and that is wonderful, and praying before the game, but running as an organization. This football team on Tuesday has an open prayer meeting in their offices to anybody wanting to come. You don't get that, I don't think, in too many other teams as well. So when I look at this team organizationally, this is a team that not just says that they go by their faith, they practice their faith, and they do it. And then when they open up the door for everybody to come in for a Bible study on every Tuesday, whether it be a sponsor, whether it be a fan, or whatever the case may be, they're trying to get the message out first that they do it via faith, and it's not a joke. And that's one thing that compared to a lot of other teams in the IFL or the CIF, I just see standing so far ahead of most of the others.
I definitely agree with that. Question three, and then we'll get the fun one. Okay. Question three, in your opinion, what can you make this league more stable and appealing to teams from across the country and become a viable source of entertainment to compete with that of the AFL and legitimize the CIF's stronghold as a developmental league of sound business that produces NFL-quality talent?
I think it's really simple, and I hate to say it, and it's so easy, but it's the fact of having the correct connections with the right people. We go back to Tim Brown. We go back to Devin Wyman. We talk about guys that have influence in the game. Tim Brown. And this is no offense against any other coach that are out there, but you know, if another coach picks up the phone and doesn't command the respect because of no one knows who they are. You know, other coaching, I think what other teams have to do is look at their coaching and say, where are we failing about getting these young men to a higher level? And if we're failing because no one's really thinking about us seriously to be able to push these guys along, then guess what? We're failing. We're failing our play. We may have a great football team here, but still, the ultimate idea is to have that relationship, whether it be the Texas Revolution with the Dallas Cowboys or the Oakland Raiders. Other teams have got to create that relationship, and I hate to say it, that relationship comes from names that are recognizable, you know, and I love some of these coaches that are in there, and I have nothing but respect for them. But as far as trying to push this league and make it a developmental league, you got to have people that are in the NFL or at least know the NFL to where someone picks up the phone, they know who you are.
Exactly. I would absolutely agree. To be a feeder league or a developmental league, people have to know what they're looking at. They have to know that that's what you're trying to be.
Yep. And if you don't have a business model to set that up, that part of it wouldn't be. I mean, look at the Texas Revolution. How many players that were promoted from this football team playing in the AFL or someplace else? Okay. I mean, we lose one of our better wide receivers before the season even started. And guess what? That wasn't happening for Clinton Solomon unless we had Wendell Davis or Devin Wyman for them to move up. That just wasn't happening. So the simple fact of the matter is it was a different attitude at the head coaching positions and the coaching positions or someone associated with the program itself that could make those kind of opportunities possible for the players.
Absolutely so. And that brings us to the last and final question that Matt Lunsford had for
I'm
you.
I'm almost afraid to hear this one.
And I'll give you the pass as far as if you don't want to explain it, we can talk about it off air or something. But
okay.
He wants to know, why does the staff refer to you as Baby Cake?
Okay. Now, that part comes from the fact that, you know, they love my motto. They love my motto. I'm the hardest working man in sports radio. And I've always believed that about myself. I didn't name myself that. That came from somebody else. And they think that's really cool. But really to bring something in this organization, and that's another thing about the organization, is that not only are they really consistent about doing business, but while they're doing business, they're having fun. I mean, and so Baby Cakes was something that was born from the president of the Texas Revolution, Charlie Hilbold, as far as and we'll probably do this next year. We're going to get words from Charlie's dad that I'm going to associate in a broadcast and bring up. And so whether it's a crazy word or whatever, I'll probably have to be on Google, because if I know Charlie and Charlie's dad as well as I think I do, they'll throw me some curveballs with a word I've never heard. So I got to do that part of it, so I'll probably have to be on Google to make sure I understand it and how I'm associated into my broadcast. And but they thought my nickname and my moniker was good, but they just thought of something that would be funny, Baby Cakes. Now I've been in my other part of my business, I've been called, you know, sugar britches and all kinds of stuff. So I found it as funny as it actually is, the fact that, yes, from Charlie, I am known as Baby Cakes. So at least that's where my understanding of where it was coming from and why I think we were actually talking on air how the whole thing erupted, and it was like the fourth or the second or third home game for the Revolution this year.
Yeah, I was pretty sure I remember listening to that broadcast, and all of a sudden it was just kind of offhanded. You guys were talking, and all of a sudden I heard it come out, and I went, oh, that's
I just
stick.
Cracked up. I just cracked up, you know. And sometimes in my other business, you know, I get called names, so they bounce off me, and that's fine. And one of my favorite ones, I was called Sugar Britches one day, and I just thought it was the funniest thing. And that's what reminded me, you know, when he said Baby Cakes, I thought that was quite funny. So it was quite a fun moment. And actually, we had Ricky Burtz actually was listening to that one, and he kind of shoots that out at me every once in a while too. So it might end up going viral. Who knows?
Yeah, that I remember when you talk about the word game there. We used to do that on another show that I started years ago, that unfortunately is not around anymore, but we used to just randomly, sometimes we'd split it into two shows, and one would talk AFC, one would talk NFC, or one would, you know, one would preview next week and the other one would recap the other week. And then sometimes we would just look at each other before we'd all go on and just, like, pass each other word sheets of, like, 10 random words we come up with that we each had to work into. It's so much fun that way.
I am horrible at that. So they definitely got the right guy to mess with if they ever want to try to do that. So, because, you know, sometimes the English language finds its way away from me, you know, more so than I, you know, how some people have a good, you know, good hold of the English language. Sonny is not one of them, because, you know, as I'm getting older, Alzheimer's is kicking in. I know what I want to say, but it never comes out that way sometimes. So, I, you know, it works out pretty good. So I'm bound to mess those up, you know, when I think next year it'll be something that will be reoccurring. And then we'll see if anybody's listening to the broadcast, which one that they knew if what word it was that I was doing. So we might play a game with it this year. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we might could get with Matt about, it doesn't have to be tickets or something, but it could be a T-shirt or even stickers or something that if you think you caught one of the words, you know, send in your guess on the on one of the social media hubs for
exactly.
The Revolution, and you get some sort of prize for it. Maybe they call your name out of the next game or something.
Yeah, so, but there's going to be a lot of changes. Hold on. Let me rephrase that. We had such a successful season that sometimes, you know, you mess with the things that are good that you don't need to mess with. There are only a few tweaks that I think that are going to be happening as far as the Revolution are concerned, unless something really changes that I don't know about. I was talking about Charlie and also Tommy. You know, their business model, you know, the way they got that all set up right now, they like where it's going, and they're in the thinking right now, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Keep going, and only make a few tweaks along the way to make it better. And I think that, and that's a big difference between the Texas Revolution from the years past to this year as well, because you can look at this year as a whole. You can see mistakes that were made, few tweaks were made, but if they had their opportunity to completely revamp it, they would never go that way, because of what happened out on the football field and the success of the 2015 season.
And while I'm thinking about it, I can help you understand Sugar Bridges a little more. That is by far, I know you come from Arizona, so it's kind of more of an out west as far as possibly your way of thinking. That's definitely a southern term. You typically hear it from a waitress at a diner that would go, "Oh, Sugar Bridges, you need some more coffee?" So that's definitely a term of endearment for sure from the South. Or the Deep South. You'll hear it a lot, those kind of things.
Matter of fact, now that you say that, where it came from originally, the Sugar Bridges came from an Atlanta person, so that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a Deep South term for sure. That's why when you said it, I was like, oh, I've been called that thousands of times. That's a term of endearment most of the time.
Yeah. During the time that I was called that, though, it was made in different reference, but I like yours better. So there you go.
I'm sure they meant it that way, right?
Yeah, that's my story, and I'm going to stick to it. So there you go.
Absolutely. And it's my show, so I'll agree with you.
You got it, my friend.
But it has been a blast having you on. And is there anything we left out before we get out of here?
God, I don't think so. My wife is looking at me and saying, "Will you shut up?" So we must have covered everything.
Yeah, probably so. Those producers from across the room that give you the evil eye.
Yeah. Producers, I like that. Producer/wife. Say, would you stop? How can you talk for sports 3 hours, you know, two or three times a week? Because we can, you know, that's hard to get across to the wife.
Well, that, you know, I've had to explain sometimes, you know, at Impact Media right now, we're after today, we're going to be down to just alternating our two NFL shows for a couple weeks. I've also had to explain, I was like, yeah, when everything picks back up, and usually around the first of the year when the indoor starts to pick up more and we get more into Revolution stuff, all four shows will be going here. So on any given week, you're looking between 5 to 10 hours of me talking about football.
Yeah. My wife giving me the dirty look. She goes, "You said you were going to order pizza at 7:15." So, you know, so there you go. So,
well, you can blame
me. But
it's
good.
I'm glad we're
able to do it. And, you know, and up on the Revolution page where the games are broadcast, that'll happen whether we get air, where we actually go in the air for the radio or not. We'll always be there, and we'll always put up the Revolution Zone there on the right-hand side. The pregame show will be on the left, and the game of the week will be right there in the middle. I think it's a good setup there for that as well.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate being able to be a part of your page and all the things you guys are doing out that way as well.
You betcha, my friend. It's been a kick. If you need anything, just hit me up on Facebook, and we'll knock it out.
Hey, that sounds like a good thing. I will let you go on and do that because it is obviously it's 8:30 out here where I'm at, and I'm pretty hungry myself. I may order a pizza. That did sound like a good idea. I may get right on that.
There you go, my friend.
All right, well, I will let you on into your night. Shout out to our lovely wives and families who put up with us talking football probably way more than normal. And they are citizens and scholars and patron saints to put up with us. But God bless them. We love them.
You betcha. Have a good one, Jeremy. We'll be talking in the future, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure we definitely will. Have a good one, Sonny.
Take care now.
And, of course, that was the hardest working man in sports radio, Mr. Sonny Clark, also the voice of the Revolution, among other things, also the host of the Couch Potato Sports Show, which he said will be firing up here soon. If you want to catch him on social media or easiest way to keep up with him, at Couch Potato SS on Twitter. Obviously, if you want to keep up with anything we're doing here soon, like I said, any kind of Revolution stuff, me, Sonny, or both, we'll be on here, special edition shows. We're going to do some fun things as well, use some of the Revolution players and guys in the organization for some fun projects coming up. Obviously, if you want to follow me on Twitter, at TheImpact99, if you want to follow the show and everything we do at Impact Media, that's at Team Impact Media on Facebook or Impact Media. Like I said, we'll be alternating shows, NFL shows here soon. Our GSU, Georgia State, obviously. Panther Zone will be firing up in a little over a month, in case you're out this way. Jaguar Zone and the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show are the ones that will alternate. End Zone Falcon Zone will be this week. Jaguar Zone will be next week. Appreciate you guys all listening to us. It's been a fun season, and you know, I'm going to miss you guys, so you have to come see me on the other shows. And definitely if you're out in the Atlanta area where we will be, at least through most of the football season. We'll move around a little bit, but our home office will all be out this way. If you are in the Atlanta area, definitely hit us up. Either way, catch us on the social media. It's been fun, guys. I'm Jeremy the Impact York. Cannons up for sure. Cannons up always. I'll never stop saying that. Go Revolution. We'll see you guys next time.